Well, hello and welcome to Working Under Pressure, Thoughts on Human Factors in the COVID Age. This is the second of our series of podcasts, and this one is very much about being in the zone and deliberate action under stress. My name is Martin Bromley. I'm an airline pilot who in 2005 lost his late wife during attempted routine surgery. But you don't want to hear from me. What you want to hear from are the experts out there on the front line. And in a moment, we'll come to Mark Stacey. Before that, just to say that this series is really about interviewing frontline staff, looking at practical actions that can be taken around human factors to maintain and improve safety in the COVID era. We're aiming to make it easier for you to do the right thing, giving you practical behaviours and tips that you can use. And just a reminder that human factors and ergonomics, 90% of it is around the design of the equipment, the tools, things that you probably can't influence too much now. What we're focusing on is the 10% that you can do something about. These are the non-technical skills, the behaviours, the techniques that can make a difference to your working day. So let me introduce Dr. Mark Stacey. He's an anaesthetist who's got an interest in human factors and maximising human performance. Mark, what's it been like for you on the front line?
Good morning, Martin, and thanks for giving me this opportunity. On the front line, it's actually been, as you can imagine, quite challenging, but also quite exhilarating in some respects. I work as an obstetric anaesthetist as part of an extraordinary team on a tertiary referral delivery suite unit. Our workload hasn't changed. People are still having babies. It's just got more difficult. What should be a celebratory time for our patients is quite frankly terrifying, both for our patients and our staff. And what this is meaning on the front line is that individuals are more likely to have their performance compromised, and I'm seeing more patients having panic attacks. In general, most of our patients are awake, and to be honest, they find our PPE sartorial elegance slightly scary, as you can imagine. Whereas the full PPE kit that we don when we're performing a general anaesthetic is probably good enough to act as an extra in a Doctor Who movie. The additional kit that we wear is also making the skills that we're supposed to be quite good at actually extremely difficult. I was wondering the other night how many pilots have ever tried flying a simulator with full PPE. We had a recent example just last week of a significant complex case that lasted over 4 hours, which is unusual on a delivery suite. And it involved ensuring that the patient and all relevant members of the team were looked after to ensure a safe and successful outcome for our patient. It was extremely challenging, both from a physical and a cognitive point of view. And it reminded me in a very pointed manner of the importance of addressing your hungry, angry, late, tired factors before you actually go into theatre. And in particular, ensuring that you've got an empty bladder. A hungry, thirsty, full-blooded anaesthetist is going to struggle to make sensible decisions, particularly as time wears on. Again, at the end of the case such as this, discovery of using your buddies, particularly somebody who wasn't in the original team, to ensure what we consider quite simple things, such as doffing, the doffing process is correctly performed, was absolutely mandatory. And it was interesting, at the end of this particular case, all the team were so tired that we couldn't even manage this without significant help from our buddies. But on the plus side, as a group, we've come together to provide teaching material, logistics, SOPs, and support for all the health workers that we work with. Material generated and agreements that would normally have taken months to make has actually taken us just a few days to generate. And I have to say, my team have been truly amazing, and it's been a privilege to be part of it.
Thanks very much, Mark. There's a number of things there that you brought up that I wanted to ask you about. But the guide that we've produced about working under pressure around non-technical skills talks about taking deliberate action when under stress. And you've already intimated that how difficult that can be. But what does taking deliberate action when under stress mean to you?
Well, I'm fortunate, Martin, in that the last few years I've been running with my team multidisciplinary training sessions, introducing the basic human factors and well-being skills to all the health workers on delivery suite. So what I tend to do is try and approach my day and teach them to approach their day with a maximizing your day model. For me, it involves two key components. It involves a philosophy and a mental model. And together, that philosophy and that mental model combine to attempt to make strategies to improve and maximize good decision-making. So the philosophy is based on the three C's of Stoic philosophy: control what you can, cope with what you can't, and concentrate on what counts. The model is based on the simplest model of the mind, and is based on trying to understand how we as individuals and as teams manage our working memory or bandwidth, and in combination of using that working memory or bandwidth with our long-term memory, in order that the skills that we're trying to perform are successfully performed. From a personal point of view, I try to ensure on a daily basis that I have a little extra bandwidth in case some of my colleagues are struggling. But by maximizing our individual bandwidth and the collective bandwidth of our teams, using a variety of strategies, some of which I'll mention in a minute, we can approach our day with this "let's maximize our day" philosophy. So I tend to start the day before by trying to ensure a good night's sleep. I've banned phones from the bedroom, unless I'm actually on call. I tend to leap out of bed athletically in the morning. Okay, perhaps not that athletically. Cycle to work. I'm lucky enough to live close enough to work that I can actually cycle, so I get in a bit of my physical exercise, and I try and get my mindset right for the day ahead. On arrival at work, I'll empty my stress bucket. A bit more about that later. On arrival on the ward, I smile and greet my colleagues, ensuring in particular that the night team are okay and addressing any issues that need addressing and dealing with them at that time. Meet the day team, and then we start to have handover, plan our day, and then work through the day. During the course of the day, hopefully I have enough awareness to make sure that all my staff are functioning well, and helping them if they're not. I started carrying small packets of chocolate chip cookies around, which I've noticed become a very valuable tool. One of the key factors is ensuring that we all have breaks, and in particular a mindful lunch. Again, I've tried to ban the use of phones at breaks. There was an interesting paper published at the beginning of last year that demonstrated the negative cognitive effects of using your phone at break time, but even on your performance after your break. And then at the end of the day, I tend to touch base with all the individuals I've worked with, especially those I might have had concerns about during the course of the day. I thank them all and head home, emptying my stress bucket again on the way out.
It's interesting you say about the use of phones. I would certainly say that that's an observation I've made in other areas, that even though you may be out of the hot zone or whatever you want to call it at the time, and taking a break, that moment just to look at the phone tends to bring in an awful lot of news. And as you were saying, there's things on there that you can't deal with, you can't help, but they can still create stress, so that when you go back into the zone, you are still slightly distracted by it. So that sounds like a really good idea.
I think I'm one of them mothers, but it is quite interesting. One of the great things about it is it does encourage interaction amongst people who may not necessarily talk to each other because they spend so much time looking at their phones. And one of the things that we encourage now at breaks is we swap recipes. We swap lunch recipes and swap recipe books. So my current discovery is a book called Bosch, which is a vegan book. I'm not a vegan, but the opportunity to develop and try new recipes, I think, is a great thing for all of us.
At a team level, Mark, I mean, you've kind of told us how you influence the performance of the team, but how do members of your team influence the performance of the team?
Well, it's quite interesting. Again, there's no doubt that there's been a much higher presence of senior leadership on the ward. We're much more present, and we try and encourage a culture of smiling and knowing people's names. We all... As a group, we try and ensure that we all walk the walk and reassure the individuals that we work with and support. I've been trying to perfect for many years my image of a swan in the hope that people will copy my behaviour. And in addition, if I can see people are struggling, asking if there's anything specific I can do to help them. I think I learned that from Chris Froek, actually. But I think we can influence it just by our behavior. It's quite interesting. Because of the change in the workload, we've actually got consultant presence 24 hours a day on the ward now. And I think this does reassure the other members of the less experienced members of staff and enables them to perform much closer to their best.
I mean, a clear issue for staff, and again, you've hinted it there, is about that kind of raised level of anxiety at the moment where the threat is very personal. So what have you seen in terms of people's anxiety, and how does what we've been talking about help?
Again, I've seen quite a significant increase in anxiety across the board, both from some quite senior people, but also many of our more junior and less trained colleagues. And it's trying to make sure that they are aware that this is a bad time and things are going to be challenging. But we all work as part of quite an exceptional team. And as long as we continue to do that, you know, our performance will be as good as it can be. One of the things I try and remind people is you can only do the best that you can, but try and make sure that it is the best that you can. In practical terms, we have a handover at the beginning of the day and halfway through the day and at the end of the day, looking at what's happening on the whole of the ward, where the likely pinch points are. We've got much more rigorous about adopting SOPs and briefings than we have in the past, both before each case and sort of catching up during the course of the day to ensure that every member of their team knows what their role is. Additionally, I teach a technique called box breathing, which is where you breathe in for the count of four, hold for the count of four, out for the count of four, hold for the count of four, in order to deal with that feeling of panic that sometimes comes upon us when we're not expecting it. Because the people I work with can see me regularly doing this with patients, I think they copy it. And certainly many of my trainings now will actually prophylactically perform this in an environment where they think things are going to be stressful. So that their heart rate is nice and slow. So the physical skills they need to perform and perform as well as they can, and the cognitively that they can perform as well as they can and actually perform in the moment. Additionally, the stress bucket I mentioned earlier, which I'm going to donate to all your listeners today, is a very simple cognitive tool which I've been using for many years. And the idea is what you do with a stress bucket is you fill it up with your stress during the course of the day. And at the end of the day, before you go home, you empty that stress bucket. So that when you get home, you've got a nice empty stress bucket, which you can fill up with the stress from home. And then you reverse the process when you come to work the next day. So you need two things. You need a stress bucket, which you now have, and you need your own trigger. My trigger is very simple. It's when I lock and unlock my bike outside my place of work. Because I've taught so many of my midwifery colleagues this over the last few years, it's now crept into common parlance. And the conversation may go along the lines of, my bucket's a bit full today, so back off.
And how do you how would you empty your bucket at the end of the day, Mark?
Well, I just literally, in my head, I have a bucket that is full of whatever the stress is, and I just literally pour it over my bike, and then I reverse it when I get home. As I say, when I leave.
Mark, any final tips and behaviours that our listeners could use tomorrow?
Yes. Well, I'm going to suggest to everybody that, you know, this is a fantastic time to become a stress management expert. There's plenty of stress out there, so why not become an expert at managing it? I can happily share a link of some useful practical material and reading material if people want to have that. I think it's really, really important that we look at strategies to maximize our sleep. It's undoubtedly the best performance-enhancing agent I've been able to find so far. We all know what it's like if we have a good night's sleep, we wake up in the morning feeling we can take on the world. And we also know what happens if we have a bad night's sleep. The stress bucket, it's free, use it. Use it every day, make it a part of your behavior. And the last thing I'm gonna suggest is a technique that I've been using for about the last 10 years called the gratitude diary. And the idea is what you do is, on my way home from work in that transition period, I consider three things that I'm proud of achieving today. So that when I return home, I'm in a much better mood than I would be otherwise. and I start the evening off with my wife in a much more positive fashion, as opposed to the normal whinging approach that has happened in the past. As my sports psychology colleague talks about, he says, our mind is like Teflon for good things, and it's like Velcro for bad. So let's think about the things that we're really impressed with and the things that we've done that we're proud of achieving today, because it will enable us.
I think that's a brilliant thought to finish on, Mark. Thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it, and keep safe yourself.
Thank you very much.
And thank you all to our listeners. We've got another podcast which we're going to be recording in just a few days' time. We're going to be continuing this theme of looking at how we can improve performance, how we can take account of human factors. Thank you very much for being with us.